Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Omer Tariq, founder and CEO of Cart.com, a fast-growing e-commerce enablement platform that's raised over $500 million in funding and reached unicorn status last year. Omer joins the show today to discuss the company's rapid growth and why Houston is the perfect city for its next phase of business. Omer, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm excited to dive into all the things about Cart.com and really look at the last few years for you. But before we go there, let's start with your career history and tell me about when you got that first interest in being an entrepreneur. When were you bit by the bug of entrepreneurialism?
Yeah, so I think to maybe understand why I became an entrepreneur, it might be helpful just to share kind of growing up and what I aspired to be and how many pivots I had to make in my early life of being a teen, and then I'll answer a question a little bit more indirectly. So I was actually born in Karachi, Pakistan, and grew up in Dubai. I was a few months old when we as a family migrated there. Growing up in Dubai in the late 80s and 90s was pretty interesting because, Dubai, as you may know, is a very wealthy city with lots of expats. I come from a very humble family, and growing up, I kind of saw a lot of glitz and glamour around me, but never really participated in it. And, you know, from an early age, it sort of like kind of gave me an understanding of like how, having access to, certain things in life could make life so much easier, but I never could get access to them. Never really was ungrateful, but was always wondering and curious and hungry for like, how do I improve my life in the long term? So I was the youngest of three. My brother is 9 years older than me, and my sister is 6 years older than me. And, we kind of left Dubai actually when I was 15. Moved to Houston. I had actually finished high school early, was majoring in astrophysics, wanted to be an astrophysicist. Houston was the perfect city with NASA being here. However, I don't think I anticipated how challenging it would be to move to a new country being a first-time immigrant, but, learned that this country, and especially Houston, is probably one of the most welcoming places in the world for people like me and my background. And really, came in here at a very young age and wanted to be an astrophysicist, realized that I couldn't be that until I became a U.S. citizen, had to change my aspirations and career goals to something different, ended up going to college for finance. And during this whole process, I've been working since I was 14 years old, and I realized that what I was doing from, the time that I started quote-unquote working was I was sort of like an entrepreneur. My first job was tutoring kids, and ultimately I hired a couple of tutors to tutor in addition to me, and I took a certain percentage off of the top of what we were charging the kids. And I got into this world of being an entrepreneur when I was almost only 14, 15 years old. I didn't know I was an entrepreneur. I thought I was just like teaching students math and physics. I was good at that. But I now, looking back, realize that I think I was just born to be a little bit, I would say, unconventional in terms of how people think about jobs and careers and everything. So, while I was in college and working on multiple different jobs and, trying to just get by barely, tuition and all that stuff was very, very hard for me to financially support, realized that, there was probably a better way for me to make some money. And I wish I had a more inspiring story of why I got into serious entrepreneurship. It was purely to change my financial status. And I came up with this idea that I would buy some jewelry from Asian countries, take advantage of the dollar arbitrage because the US currency is stronger and those places are cheaper to live, and sell that jewelry here in Houston at a premium. The place I picked was actually the flea markets up near Greens Point Mall in Houston. That's where we lived in an apartment. And the reason I picked the flea market was because I was going to school Monday to Friday. Also, I couldn't really afford to get like a stall at a mall or something because it was very expensive and required like some minimum rent commitments and stuff, which I didn't have any. Raised a little bit of money, raised, I call it with quotes here, because I went to several people asking for $1,000 and nobody loaned me that. But then I went to 10 people asking for $100 and they loaned me that. That was much easier for them to do. Used that $1,000, bought a bunch of jewelry, paid for a couple of weeks of rent, put a big old yellow sign around my neck on the weekend, 7 a.m. Saturday, and started walking around the flea market selling jewelry. And that was the beginning of a more formal entrepreneurial journey for me, from being a tutor and having tutors teach for me. And that ended up being honestly life-changing for me, because I think the first day I made $600. And for me, that was someone that was making $6 an hour. That was a lot of money. And I was like, okay, this is the way to change your life, and this is the greatest country in the world that allows you to do that. So ever since then, I've really not looked back, right? And we grew that business in the flea markets to pretty significant scale, and we sold it. So I had my first exit at 19. Ended up joining an early stage startup because I, again, wanted to be in an entrepreneurial environment. Wasn't looking to start my own company right away and wanted to just understand how companies are even built, and got that opportunity with a company called Blinds.com. Their CEO and founder, Jay Steinfeld, took a bet on me. And I think they were doing about 10, 12 million a year when I started. Ended up growing that business to about $400 million. I was their CFO and chief operating officer. We exited the company to Home Depot back in 2014. It was incredible. And going through the journey of building something from 10 million to 400 million, raising capital, making acquisitions, scaling the business, hiring people, putting processes in, building out the data and analytics infrastructure, figuring out like how companies can scale during this age of sort of internet exponential growth was honestly life-changing for me, because I sort of combined that learning with what I had learned being an entrepreneur, being at the flea market, or whether it was tutoring. It helped me start Cart.com after that. So, I've been doing Cart now for 3 years.
Yeah, I think it's such a testament to that risk taker mentality. Not everybody has that, right? The risk of borrowing money from your friends, the risk of joining a small company, a startup, it's a risk and it's paid off for you. But I think that's like that like core entrepreneurial like meat and bones that you have to have, right?
I'll say something here. I think like and I really feel like people that are first generation immigrants here, or people that come from nothing, have this asymmetric advantage, which is you're not actually taking a risk when you have nothing to lose. for me, I wasn't taking a risk. I was just like, I just needed to get by, and whatever got me by in the most meaningful way that I could control was the way I thought about it. So it's interesting, entrepreneurs are perceived as risk takers when, in many cases, and I'll just speak for myself, like I actually don't like taking a lot of risk. I look at what's the worst thing that can possibly happen, and then I mitigate around it, and then I'm like ready to take the leap of faith, right? So in ways I'm actually risk averse, but it sounds sort of counter to way people think about entrepreneurship.
Yeah, you got to weigh those costs versus benefit. So going through that the exit for Blinds.com, obviously you had a front row seat for that. How much of that affected what you did next?
I mean, look, I think, every entrepreneur kind of dreams of like building something and ultimately exiting to a larger organization. That's sort of like how you ultimately end up getting paid, right? In meaningful ways. And having gone through that journey, it honestly gave me sort of three big takeaways that made me a better person and a better professional. I think one, I realized that when you were at $10 million of revenue, there is no way in the world anyone could have predicted that that company could grow to $400 million at some point in the future. And I think too many times we focus on the end versus the actual journey of like building something incredible. And to me, that was such a big lesson, because I think sometimes you overanalyze and think about the exit or IPO or what the end is, when it really doesn't matter. It's actually getting there, which is what's important. That was like one big takeaway for me, and it really changed the way I thought about the world. Two, I think, you know, I probably realized this very, very late, but I'm thankful that I realized it, is that the most meaningful value in any organization, once you get past a certain scale, is actually created, and it's actually directly correlated with the value of people you have within that organization, how motivated those people are, what culture you have within the company, how hard they think about the success of the company, and how, you know, incredible amounts of work they're willing to put in as a result of all those things ultimately determines the outcome of that company. And, you know, when you're a small scale entrepreneur, or you're an early stage company, or you're working for someone, you just never really understand how valuable like people actually are to an organization. And seeing the culture evolution at Blinds from, you know, 30 people to hundreds of people, and how everything kind of came together, really kind of forced me to think about leadership and people development and talent and hiring and looking at people and how to, you know, actually motivate them. And that, again, I think just really changed the way that the future, you know, was sort of like perceived by me. And then I think the last thing was honestly like just having more financial freedom, right? Like where, again, now that we had gotten to a point where I wasn't worried about putting food on the table for my family, I could actually step back and think about the big thing, right? And when you think about the emergence of Cart and how we started the company, it was always this crazy idea that was either going to be a $100 billion company or like completely implode, because it was so hard to do. And I would have probably not done that if I weren't, you know, one, financially prepared to take that risk, but two, I think just having learned how to scale a company and understanding the importance of people and all the pieces you need to actually build a billion-dollar company, there was no way I could have done it, right? So it was a huge inflection point in my life, and I'm grateful for it.
Well, that segues right into what I wanted to ask you about, is that origin story of Cart.com. I mean, you talked a little bit about mitigating risk before, you know, taking the leap. So what was the thought process between, you know, having the idea for Cart and then feeling good enough to take that risk?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think building Blinds.com to hundreds of millions of dollars, and then being at Home Depot for 6 years following that, and really helping them build their dot-com business to billions and billions of dollars, I think I realized that the platform was actually more valuable than the product. And I was like, man, like, what if everybody in the world, every brand in the world, could have access to the same platform capabilities that are offered by a Home Depot? Like, how easy it would allow brands to successfully meet their customers across whatever channel their customers are buying, right? In today's world, when, you know, the average consumer, like my 12-year-old, you know, like buy something on Amazon and then on TikTok and then on Snapchat and then on Facebook, and then he goes to the website, and, you know, it's like they're all over the place in terms of how they're transacting with these brands. And when you think about the complexity that's needed by a brand to operationally and technologically execute against a multi-channel strategy, it's really freaking hard. So Home Depot, you know, was amazing at it, but nobody's got the balance sheet power and talent access that a Home Depot could have. So I was like, man, what if we could build that massive infrastructure and then open it up to every brand in the world to tap into it to scale their company, right? So that was the idea inception. Now, from day one, we knew this is going to require boatloads of capital for us to pull off. So, I mean, before we even meaningfully, I would say, went to market with the idea, I decided to spend just a significant amount of time in crystallizing what we were trying to accomplish here and talking to people that got it. And we were very lucky that I think within a few months of starting the company, we had raised about $40-45 million. I think we were one of the success stories out of Houston that raised a seed and Series A round, one of the largest in probably Houston's history, in within 4 months of starting the company. And it was because of that crispness within the idea. And then, once we raised that capital, that really helped de-risk a lot of things for us.
What was that like? You mentioned Amazon, and it is such a weird time we're living in that everything is readily available at our fingertips, but it's not necessarily a very well-developed space. So when you were early on having those conversations, how many people were just like, you can't compete with Amazon? Like, there's already people who do this.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think in especially in the early days, we were perceived as like a competitor to Amazon. And I think what we have since done is sort of we actually partner with Amazon today. Amazon is just one channel out of thousands of channels we actually want our customers to transact on. But if you think about the infrastructure that we're building operationally and technologically, then it sort of like looks and feels like an Amazon, right? But we're not a marketplace at the same time. So it's impossible to see if we're like, what are we? But I mean, man, I would say off the 1,000 people we spoke to, 950 of them thought we were crazy. Right. So the percentage decline rate, if you may, of like believing in what we wanted to do in the early days was very high. 95% of people thought we were absolutely crazy. And what's been the most fun, by the way, has been like talking to those people again now, where we're like 3 years in, we're hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue, we're a profitable company, we have, massive gross margins, 6,000 brands we work with globally, like 1,800 employees around the world. And those people come back to us and say, holy smokes, like we never thought you could pull it off. And we like to say we told you so, right?
I think it's to me, it's like the difference of you looking at the Home Depot web presence and like the e-commerce side of that and seeing it for the platform. Whereas like a lot of people just saw that Amazon existed and it's like that's just what it is. But it's like, no, there's so much more out there. There's so much more that needs to come from that. How has the tech evolved over the years? I mean, you obviously had this vision 95% of people didn't understand. And then how like kind of creating the technology and the suite of services you provide, how has that evolved?
Yeah, when we started, we, I think, first focused on the idea of building the software stack out before we meaningfully invested in the operational stack, if you may. And I think what we learned on our during our journey was that, man, like the maturation velocity of the operational tech stack, operational stack, and the technology stack actually needs to like be exactly the same. As a matter of fact, the maturation velocity of the operational stack needed to be even faster because, it's really easy to lose money if your operational infrastructure is not fully utilized. On the technology side, you can kind of, in the world of cloud computing we live in, right? You can toggle up, toggle down, reduce costs up, cost down. On the operational infrastructure, if you have a facility that's 1 million square feet and you haven't filled it up, you're paying rent on square footage that you're not making money on, right? And that's painful, painful, right? So we sort of toggled in and out of investing in increasing the velocity of our operational infrastructure. We're now at a stage where we have almost 10 million square feet of fulfillment space, 14 facilities across the US, and we're now accelerating our velocity on the tech stack. We're introducing a few different products probably the next 4 to 6 weeks, more to come on that. I think if you guys, I think the world will be very, very excited about what we have in play around bringing it all together as it comes on the technology side. So we're really excited about that. So we've kind of evolved in those stages if you think about it.
Yeah, I think it's also hard because just as e-commerce has evolved so much in the past decade, it's gonna keep happening. I mean, now you mentioned your son can buy something on TikTok. Like it's wild. So how do you stay like keep pulse on trends for e-commerce?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's challenging, and we have to be maniacally focused on the needs of the brands and customers we work with. Because look, at times, right, there's like this very sinful need that companies have around overbuilding and skating to where the puck is going, right? Where you kind of go to these big investor board meetings and show them, hey, we're going to invest $100 million building this thing, and when we're done, there will be thousands of customers standing in line to buy it. But in reality, if you haven't invested the right amount of time learning what your customers really want, and then more importantly, are willing to pay for, it's a really, really tough thing to execute successfully, right? So we just stay very close to our customers, man. I say this to everyone in my company. I say, look, y'all work for me, but I work for the customer, right? And it doesn't matter if it's $100 a year customer or a $20 million a year customer. If anybody calls me up or emails me, I am on it, right? And this is just, you can ask any of our customers, right? If they've ever reached out to me, like, I'm right there to be helpful and supportive. Even though we have hundreds of employees around the world today, I am just like very maniacally focused, and I feel like my management team and my leadership team and my team that kind of helps me be successful in that element is also brand obsessed. They're obsessed with the success of these companies. So, if you stay obsessed with the success of something, and obsessed is a very strong word, and we deliberately use it, then you'll keep up with the trends, right? You'll hear from your customers that, man, TikTok's coming up, or Shein's now the new marketplace, or Temu is a sort of new thing where we have to connect into and really sell our product, or we're really learning that dynamic shipping is sort of interesting, right? So these e-commerce trends are obviously very interesting when you read about them in the news and these conferences and AI and machine learning. But I think much more important than that is like what your customers are telling you is ultimately, for us at least, the Bible of how we operate.
Well, I think that also is very unique about Cart.com is that it's not an Amazon, it's not a platform in itself. Like you're providing the resources for the brand. So to be brand focused is kind of the difference maker for Cart, I feel like.
That's right. That's right.
So we've talked a little bit about the really rapid growth for the company. And I wonder why, and you mentioned some like the Series A, Series B, Series C, which were like back to back and crazy and not common in Houston, at least. Why do you think Cart had such a rapid growth trajectory?
I mean, look, I think I'll start off by saying and acknowledging that luck has had a huge part in it. I think it's very easy for people to take credit of something when it's going really well, and then blame someone else when it's not going well. We don't think that way. We do feel grateful and blessed that the time during which we started the company, there were massive tailwinds around an e-commerce infrastructure play, and we capitalized on it. If we would have started, for example, in second half of 22 or 23, we would have been dead by now, right? Because the capital markets just basically like evaporated, right, during that period of time. So we're very lucky that we started when we did. Now look, we you know if you if we think about it, right, like I'm not a B2B software guy, and I'm not a B2B logistics guy. Like, I shouldn't be running a commerce enablement company, right? But what I do know is what my customers want, right? Because I was a D2C entrepreneur. I was in the retail environment with someone like Home Depot. So I think what has allowed me to do really is to use my knowledge of the customer, because I was, who they are today, and combine it with a highly skilled team that we've put together that has an understanding of B2B logistics, B2B software, B2B services, and bring those two things together in a way that I think resonates with customers, investors, and employees. If you can convince someone to come work for you And it's the same thing as convincing a customer to open up their wallet to pay you. And it's the same thing as convincing someone to invest capital in you. They have to believe in your ability to create some value for them, right? And I think we've been very lucky, but also effective at being able to do that.
Looking back on that growth, I know you spoke to the VC market and that process of a startup. What were the biggest growing pains for you? Was it hiring? Was it getting the funding? What was the biggest challenge of that period?
Yes, all of it. I mean, look, I think building cart.com for our team has been the hardest thing we've probably all ever done in our collective professional careers. Because, for a company to go from zero to hundreds of millions in revenue, zero to thousands of employees, zero to hundreds of millions of dollars of funding, zero to thousands of customers that now are relying on your ability to take care of them, all that is amazing. And it's, incredible. And we celebrate the success of it. But being able to effectively manage that scale and that zero to one and 1 to 10 and 10 to 100 journey, I mean, everything has been challenging. People ask me, what keeps me up at night? And I say, everything keeps me up at night. Being able to capitalize the company, being able to hire the right people at the right time, being able to divest from projects and areas that are not paying off for us, being able to, provide an experience to your brands where, it doesn't mean anything if I say I'm obsessed with their success if I'm not actually delivering on the value they want from me, right? I can all day long give them lip service on how much I care about them, but if I'm hurting their business, then at the end of the day, I still suck. So being able to go in that velocity to become a company that people can trust and have a reputation, right? Where now our customers actually, every week we actually post a testimonial on our social pages around some customer talking about how we've changed their trajectory on making them more money or saving them more profit. It's been really, really hard. But again, I think it just goes back to being obsessed about their success. And that really allows us to do what we do today.
Well, it's unique. I think the cart.com story is unique, but especially so for Houston. And I know a lot of people know this, but some might not, that founded in Houston, but then relocated headquarters to Austin in 2021. And then as of last year, back to headquartered in Houston. So tell me about the decision-making process to making those moves.
Yeah. So look, I actually never left Houston. I've been in Houston now forever, and I don't think I'm planning on leaving anytime soon. I love Houston. The city has given me everything I have. And I even love the traffic. I love everything people hate about Houston. I love the city, the hot summers, the breezes that mess up your pipes and all the above. So let me just start off by saying that. So, for me to build something here was always a priority, and I think it will always be a priority. When we kind of moved our headquarters to Austin, or kind of co-headquartered and said, hey, we're headquartered in both cities, we were learning that in 2020, 2021, there was a huge influx of investors and employees and even customers that were moving and engaging in the Austin part of our state and in the city of Austin. There were lots of interesting conferences. There were lots of technology companies. And it was sort of like, Austin was doing a really good job of branding themselves of being the city in Texas to come to when you think about innovation or technology or, whatever. So, what we learned was that as we were building our own brand of being a technology company, of being a company that wanted to gain sort of global, at least national reputational credibility, we thought that, man, if we're closer to the action that's happening in Austin, we would probably get there faster. I think Austin served its purpose. It certainly allowed us to be in the limelight in all the right ways, and I'm grateful for it. But I think once we got to a point where, once we did our Series C round and became a unicorn, at that point you're how many more people do you want to know about you? So I was I think we're now at a scale where actually the infrastructure that Houston provides is probably something that you know will be more attractive and useful for us in the long term. Because at the end of the day, both Houston and Austin are great cities. What makes it easy for me in Houston, right, is just I know the city, I know the infrastructure, I know the people. A big chunk of our seed and Series A capital was raised in Houston, so there's this like loyalty here that I have. That I was like, man, if I just go back to Houston, it'll probably be easier at this point in time now that we've scaled and are nationally known as a company that is trying to disrupt the way commerce enablement works.
Yeah, I think it almost seems like you got to have your cake and eat it too, right? And that a lot of people, I talk to entrepreneurs all the time and they cite access to VC, access to employees. It's hard in Houston. And so getting to go over into Austin and kind of make most of the tech scene there does seem like you get to kind of, you know, have both.
For sure.
So has Houston changed a lot in the, I know it's been a short but wild ride for cart.com, but have you seen Houston change?
In the last 3 years?
Yeah.
Not really. yeah, I mean, look, I think we are trying a lot of things as a city, and you know, I loved when the Ion popped up and the kinds of incredible things Rice is doing around entrepreneurship and University of Houston and so many colleges here. I think the things that were great about Houston, which is great academic institutions, having high diversity, having deliberate focus on trying to change the startup ecosystem, all of those things have stayed constant. I think I don't know if we've seen like massive outcome shifts, right? Like where we can say like, oh my God, in the last 3 years, life has gotten so much easier for me to recruit talent to Houston, right? Or all these investors from Silicon Valley and New York are actually moving to Houston to plant their headquarters or shops or even remote teams here to invest in. Like none of that's really happening. And if it is, like, I don't know about it, right? So I don't really think it has changed, unfortunately.
Well, like I said, it's been a short but wild ride. So it's not a good sample size of years, I guess. So one thing that I know you've spoken about being super important and with just how fast the company has grown, culture must be very important to you. What are your thoughts on both creating a good startup culture and then also maintaining it throughout growth?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's probably if you want to build a company that has more than 10 people in it, then you have to get your culture right. And the secret is it's not science, it's art. There is no book you can read. It's like parenting. It's like nobody tells you like how to raise your kids the right way. And you can read about it and there are things you do and things you don't do, but ultimately like how your kids end up like in their lives is like all art, right? And it's like the moments you have with them. So it's like, you know, building culture at Cart has been really hard because we're a remote first company. We don't get to see everybody in person all the time. But we're very blessed that, you know, for a company that started 3 years ago, for a company that has grown as quickly as we have, how much ups and downs we've seen in the last 3 years, we do have an incredible culture. And our culture is about people coming to work every day and giving 150% of themselves in the obsession of the brands we work with. And that's kind of what shows up in our success today. You know, we try to do a lot of things to bring people together. We actually did our leadership summit last year. So, you know, we're starting to do a lot more in-person events, get people together, develop this culture of like being able to think beyond boxes, you know, being able to collaborate with people, work together, being human. Those are all of our core values, by the way. You know, I think it's been a lot of fun trying to kind of like fit the puzzle pieces together to build an effective culture, but it's an ongoing journey, right? It's like a live organism that has to evolve over time. And we hope that it turns out to be okay in the next 10 years.
Well, speaking of evolution and looking back on those very changing 3 years, very important 3 years, what are the next few years look like for Cart?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think we have our eyes set on, you know, potential. We're probably going to be looking to make a few more acquisitions in the next couple of years. We are looking to expand our footprint a little bit more globally, you know, hopefully in the next few years. We've thought about like, okay, is an IPO in the mix of all of this? The answer is who knows, right? The markets are uncertain right now, and it would be naive for us to say that, hey, in 2 years we'll go public. But look, we are focused on, today we're helping 6,000 brands. We hope that we'll be helping at least 60,000 brands in the next 3 years, and have 10x the company. And growth is on our mind, and both organic and inorganic, and not just at the U.S. national level, but international global level. So, we've always had very, very big aspirations and ambitions, and we hope that we will continue to sort of like execute against those.
Yeah, it's hard to really have a firm exit strategy in these days unless you've got the ball. So that makes a lot of sense. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of this with me today. It's really fun covering Cart.com. I mean, I think it's such a unique story, and I love that it's a Houston story. So over the years, I've had many a Cart.com story, and it seems like I'll keep up that pace with all of that y'all are accomplishing. So thanks for joining.
Thank you so much for inviting me. This has been fun. Appreciate it, Natalie.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.